This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Houston, we do not have a problem.
Sarah Webb, Joy Drive's astrophysicist.
Good afternoon, Sarah.
Good afternoon.
It's great to chat with you. Lots of things happening up in the in space at the moment, but a big telescope is about to be switched on, I understand. How significant is this?
That's right. So tonight we're getting some of the first ever images from a telescope called the Vera Rubin Observatory. Finally, a telescope named after an incredible woman in history.
Wonderful.
And it's pretty remarkable because these images are breathtaking. You can already see a sneak peek if you just Google Vera Rubin. And I'm very excited because I will personally get to use this telescope in a year's time.
Where is it located?
It's located in Chile, so up in a region where there's not a lot of light pollution, which is what makes this telescope really powerful, as we can see really faint, really distant objects.
Now, you just mentioned the first telescope to be named after a woman. How do they name the telescopes? Are they all after men, are they?
It's one of the very few that's named after a woman. Telescopes, they can get names in all sorts of ways. Sometimes it's by a benefactor. So if somebody donates or bequeaths a large amount of money, they get their name on it. Sometimes it's just after people in history. And we know that history has always had a complex relationship with making sure that people are represented as they should be. And so I think we're doing our best to make sure that we're highlighting some of the amazing work. So Vera Rubin, for anyone who doesn't know, is who we call the mother of dark matter. She is the person who did most of the scientific inquiry to confirm that dark matter exists.
She must be a very smart person.
She was an incredible, incredible scientist.
What sort of, if we look at all the telescopes around the world, for example, like how powerful is this? Is it much more powerful than what's currently existing? What will it bring to the world of astrophysics?
So it is currently, or it will be, the biggest digital camera that we have ever built.
Oh, wow.
Full stop. The biggest camera that humans have ever assembled is on this telescope. So it is enormously powerful, with billions of pixels that we're looking at over the year as we take data from the universe. It's also able to scan the sky every 3 days or so. So it means that we're getting this moving picture almost of what the sky is doing and how objects in it, so galaxies and stars, are changing very rapidly over time.
So once this telescope is up and running and we've got data from it, do you expect to get lots of new exciting bits of information that we couldn't get before?
We do. So because it's constantly scanning the sky, it will help us hopefully uncover a few different things. One of the major things that people are very excited for it to try look for is something called a kilonova. This is when two neutron stars merge, create a giant explosion, and they're very elusive. They only last for a couple of days, and we've only ever seen one. So we are very keen to try and see a few more.
Now, let's talk about that. As a star just has just exploded, hasn't it?
It has. We've got essentially a brand new star if you look up in the right patch of the sky. So what happened? It was last week, scientists noticed that we have something called a nova. So not quite a supernova, but a small explosion on a smaller type star. And it increased its brightness by 4 million times. And it's in the constellation of Lupus, which conveniently for us located in Victoria at about 9 p.m. tonight, if you look directly above us, that is where that constellation is. And if you get a sky app and have a search for it, it's near the Dog's Paw on the constellation.
How bright did it get?
Bright-ish. It's still very, very faint. So we're not able to see it if you're in the middle of Melbourne City, but if you venture out, it should be as bright as some of the fainter stars that you typically see on the night.
So when a star, when a star explodes like this, I mean, I thought stars were already sort of on fire and hot.
Yeah.
And so what, how does it explode even more? So I'm sorry, what happens, a silly question, but it's...
No, it's not a silly question at all. So most stars are undergoing nuclear fusion in their core. So they've got that nuclear kind of explosions happening essentially in their core because it's very hot and very dense. What happens with these stars, though, is that it's one called a white dwarf. So it is very tiny, very cool. It's eventually what our sun will become when nuclear fusion is no longer happening. So no more energy production. And what happens is it steals material from a nearby star. And as that material hits its surface, it can ignite something called a thermal nuclear runaway reaction. So still a nuclear reaction, but a little bit different. And they are extremely energetic and very, very bright for a short period of time.
When will our star or our sun finally hit that phase where it...
Finally kick the bucket.
We won't see it, will we?
No, we're fine. We've got about 4 billion years or so until it's really looking rough for us, yeah.
Imagine if they we got to a point where science enabled us to, you know, preserve life for an infinite amount of time and... But then you and I are sitting here talking on a Tuesday in 4 billion years of time. I mean, by then, the imagination just goes wild in terms of what could happen, where we could be, what would go on,
who's
going to switch the lights out on Earth, you know, on the last day. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, we'd have to move planet. We'd have to figure out where to go next, and hopefully it's somewhere fun and adventurous and kind to us.
Now, next up, we've got a planet spinning alone through space. I feel sorry for this planet, Sarah. I mean...
I knew you'd feel sorry for it. It is a bit of a lonesome. So we've got this planet that we discovered a few years ago that looks like it's by itself. So normally planets orbit around a star. That's kind of how they're formed. They like living there. We're obviously on one. They don't tend to be alone unless something catastrophic has happened. But this one appears to be alone. And for the first time using the James Webb Space Telescope, so a telescope in space, we've been able to look at it and get a little bit more data to try and figure out what it is. And we think it's either a giant gas planet or potentially even a failed star itself. But the jury's still out on that.
Oh, it's been rejected.
It might have been. It might not have reached the threshold to start that nuclear fusion to become a full-fledged, bright, beautiful star. And it could have just existed as it is for billions of years.
What does it tell us, or what can you, in terms of space and what happens with planets, what does it tell us so far? Because I feel like we're learning so much. Every time we speak to you, there's something new that we've learned.
There is something new. The rate of what we're learning in the last decade is incredible. So with this type of source, what's really cool is if it is a planet, so if it is a gas giant, similar to, say, Jupiter, and it's alone, so it's away from stars, which makes it easier for us to try and collect its light, we can actually do essentially meteorology. We can try and understand, are there clouds forming, how dense are they as they move around, what type of compositions do we get in the upper atmosphere, which is a really cool area of science. It's complicated for me to even try and fathom how clever people are who work this out, but we can tell so much from spectra of what is happening on very, very distant planets.
Fantastic. Sarah, before we let you go, if we want to have a look at this star that has just exploded, tell us again, how do we go and search for it?
So go to, my favorite website is called stellarium-web.org. It is completely free. You can then type in the constellation Lupus, so Lupus, and that is the constellation it's in, and it is near the dog's paw. You'll get a little bit of an artwork and you'll see roughly where the paw is, and you can use it on your phone too, and it will help you guide yourself to the center of the sky. But you're looking directly up at about 9 p.m. tonight.
So head to Stellarium and search for Lupus. Have a look for the dog's paw.
That's right.
Love it, Sarah. Love chatting with you. We'll catch you again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. That's Sarah Webb from Swinburne University of Technology.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.